Blog Talk Radio.
There's no earthly way of knowing.
Yeah, I know.
Which direction we are going.
Okay, all right. Here we go. Well, Plan B.
Good man, a lot of time.
Which direction we are going?
Direct the El Camino. It would have been DWI.
If heaven ain't a lot like Dixie, I don't want to go. If heaven ain't a lot like Dixie, I'd just as soon stay home. I was one of the chosen few to be born in Alabama. I'm just like my daddy's son. I'm proud of who I am. I went through a lot of good women. Shook old Jim Beam pants. If I
Yeah. Welcome to Tipping Points. Yes, I am Stephen Platinum. It is a very special edition of Tipping Points. I'm Stephen Platinum, and joining me as always, laid back, Larry Goodman. How's it going,
man,
tonight, Larry?
My apologies. That was brutal as hell. I screwed that up so bad.
I kind of loved it, though. I kind of loved it. Man. Woof. Cotton Eye Joe's coming up next. For all you out there driving or listening. You know, whenever I drive to Georgia, actually, whenever I've been on any long drive, and I'll make that drive again on Saturday, I will sometimes play a game called Can I Just Listen to the Radio on the Way There? Like, not cheat and put on any music that I have on my phone or anything like that. Just, can I just, whatever the local radio stations are as I go from place to place, can I just listen to those and be happy? And my Lord, are there a lot of country stations. Like, it dominates the airwaves. So I've sort of developed, you know, lots of people say, I don't like country. I guess what I found out about myself is I don't like newer country, but certainly old country, like, man, that just works when you're driving around. Appeals to that half-white side of me. Well, we have Wildcat Wendell Cooley. Larry Goodman, my goodness, how did you hook that up? I got to hear about that story because I'm sure it had something to do with this weekend and where you were.
Well, it did. And I have been and I continue to be a mark for Continental Championship Wrestling. And I had to make my way down to Dothan for yet another Continental reunion show. And Wendell Cooley was there. And Dave Wills was nice enough to do the introduction, and he was up for coming on our show, so I'm excited that we have him, and that was my screwed up tribute to Wendell Cooley at the beginning of the show here, since he used to use that music, and so yeah, that's how that happened. And when you're speaking of country music, by the way, if we had Trent Van Dries on here, who played in a number of country bands, played for Jet Williams, Hank Williams' daughter.
Did he really? Holy moly!
Yeah, he toured with her. If he was on her, he would tell us in no uncertain terms that, you know, basically country music is dead and that what passes for country music now is not really country music. But that's another topic for another day.
I don't know how to reconcile that Trent Van Dries loves old country music, used to play it, but Nick Bockwinkel is his guy, right? Like, I always think that must be sort of strange that Nick Bockwinkel and country music, like those two things don't quite go. Like Nick Bockwinkel is like matinee idol-ish kind of look. I would think he'd be like sort of a, I don't know, what kind of music would I associate with Nick Bockwinkel? Like Dean Martin or something like that. Trent Van Dries is an interesting guy. Tell us about the show that you went to, Larry. It's strange. I didn't know. When's the last time they did that sort of continental reunion show? It was a while ago, wasn't it?
Well, actually, they revived it again last year. It had not been done since 2009. Was the one that I remember, which was really going to be like, in my mind, was the finale. They had Charlie Platt there, and they had a lot of the old-time guys there, and they did a lot of really cool interviews with the guys talking about working in the territory. And they had some good matches, too. So I thought that was the end. And then, lo and behold, Dennis Gale ran this show last year at this time and drew, depending on who you'd talk to, between 500 and 700 people. And then brought it back again this year and drew another 450, 500 people. And the mind-boggling thing about it to me was that it's not a one-shot deal, that they're going to run Blakely, Georgia here later this summer and have booked a main event six-man with a combined 200 years of age on one side of the ring. I never thought – I'm just curious to see how they're going to get out of this or what they're going to do with this with – Ron Fuller, Robert Fuller, and Jimmy Golden teaming up. Ron Fuller said he hasn't wrestled in 30 years. And I think he might be accurate in saying that.
You know, it reminded me of when Lou Thesz had this idea that he would wrestle in like 6 or 7 different decades. That was his goal. And he had this last match in Japan. I don't know if you've ever heard this story. And he rather quickly got hurt, but the guy who took the photographs did such a good job, and Fez was so revered over in Japan, they basically rewrote what happened in the match in the paper and magazine accounts, and had these great pictures of sort of like Lou Thesz on top during that match. And Lou Thesz was said to be very kind of embarrassed by what had happened. And it was like, he's like, that photographer must be a genius because he got the only 3 pictures where I could have looked like a wrestler. He was very unhappy with the performance. And then I'd always heard Mae Young, you know, her goal was to have a match once she turned 100 and all that kind of stuff. It just seems unfathomable that you could take 30 years off and do something, but certainly, you know, the Fullers and I mean, they'll figure it out, and I'm sure a lot of people will pay to buy a ticket to see it. Now, how many people were there, Larry? Like 450, 500 people?
Yeah, I'm going to say 450. It might have been 500. They didn't use the main farm center building where Continental did all their TV tapings and all that. They used what stands next to it, an annex building. That they probably couldn't have gotten more than they might could have got 600 or 700 in there, but that would have been the limit for that building. It's a much smaller space, but it had a real good feel to it. And of course, our guest Wendell Cooley looked like he could still go, as did his partner Frankie Lancaster. And we're going to talk a little bit about their run in Puerto Rico as the Heartbreakers. Davey Rich looked good. Who else wrestled? Smothers wrestled. He was in there. He looked okay. So and some of the other legends were just there, as you know, making appearances, like Adrian Street. He didn't wrestle. But yeah, the Fullers and Golden. And actually Robert looked damn good for 65. We'll see.
It's interesting talking about older guys in wrestling. For a while, the WWE was kind of going for that. It wasn't all that long ago that Jericho, you know, was taking on the likes of like Snuka and Piper and Steamboat in a match. But, you know, in the last few years, they've had a couple of scares, right? I mean, between Jerry Lawler at the announce table having a thing, Ricky Steamboat as well, that I'm curious if at the in the WWE, if that's something they would ever risk again. I was thinking about that as I watched the end of Raw. By the way, one thing I've noticed about the end of Raw, it's, and some people might disagree with this, it's almost like they've given up on the third hour, like the ratings. They've just,
yeah,
they just know the ratings are going to be low. So they're going to put a segment on at the end, which ostensibly seems like they're complimenting, right? We're having the women's contract signing in the main event spot. But the reality is they want to put the Roman Reigns, AJ Styles stuff at a point where people are actually watching en masse.
Exactly.
And watching Flair again, jeez, I'm gonna go to my grave thinking this. Stephanie McMahon is so bad, man. Like, it's like she smacks Ric Flair and he takes a bump off of it. And I think to myself, like, why doesn't Natalya do that? Like, it's Stephanie McMahon like crushing somebody else. But I that segment was really interesting to me because I was looking at Flair, and you know, Flair was going into his old thing and he was strutting around, and he got the crowd in North Carolina legitimately excited at the thought of him and Shane McMahon going at it. And I thought to myself, well, God, I think there was a time where they would have just pulled the trigger on that without even thinking about it. Oh yeah, let's do a thing with Shane and Rick. The crowd seems to really go for that. Now I wonder if they would let Ric Flair do a thing, to do a real physical thing. Watching Bret Hart, did you see in the pay-per-view where Bret Hart put the sharpshooter on Rick and Natalya did on Charlotte?
Yes.
It was hard to watch. You know, it's tough to watch Bret Hart. You know, these guys, wrestlers, especially back in the day, were just larger than life. You know, like Wendell Cooley, something I want to ask him is, my God, my favorite match, I watched more than a few matches, but he does this match with Adrian Street. And Larry, I swear to God, it's probably 7 minutes, and about 6 minutes and 30 seconds of it is nothing. And the crowd just, like, I found myself sort of like getting antsy, but in a good way, where it's just like, God, Adrian Street just kept kicking him in the head and not letting him in the ring. And it was frustrating. And then I realized, wait, this is what they want. They've got me in the palm of their hand. And then they went in and did this sort of great finish, and the crowd's just losing their mind and throwing babies in the air. And I just thought to myself, like, wow, you know, I can only imagine if you're an older guy like a Flair or whatever. I mean, the modern wrestling thing has to seem like landing on the moon.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
With what the guys are expected to do.
Well, and just going back to the Dothan show for a second, the main event was ostensibly Robert Fuller against one of the Dirty Blondes after a challenge was issued, and what they wound up doing was literally 30 seconds. Robert starts tattooing him. The other Dirty Blonde guy jumps in the ring. It degenerates into a brawl. It's all over in 60 seconds. Golden comes down and Ron comes down and save him. And it's strictly an angle to set up the match they're going to do in Blakely. But my thought was that was all they needed to do. If they had done anything more physical, it would have exposed too much, and that it was just perfect. And it was really no match at all.
How do you reconcile that, Larry, with a guy like Mike Jackson, who does do more and does wrestle longer matches, but manages to pull it off? What is Mike Jackson's secret? Because that's insane to me. I have not seen Mike Jackson do his thing in more than a few years. But I mean, for real, like, this between me and you and all the people listening, when you watch Mike Jackson wrestle, is it seriously, like, okay? I can't imagine. He's 65 or 67, isn't he?
He's 66 years old, and he once again performed the impossible and pulled off an athletic match at the age of 66 that wasn't bad at all. I mean, I don't know how he does it. He had the kind of the good, the bad, the ugly on that show because, you know, Chick Donovan tried to do this. No disrespect to him at all, but he tried to do a match where he was, like, doing too much moving around, and it really He has a bad knee, it appears, and it was just really not something that you want to see. It's not how I want to remember legend-type people.
Right.
But Jackson, no. I mean, he pulled it off. I don't know how he does it.
You know, that's been sort of a staple of the WWE over the years. You give different guys this gimmick, whether it was like Rob Conway or Heath Slater, the guys who wrestle the legends and old timers and put them over and make them look great. And I'm just wondering if that's a thing of the past. And if so, I mean, part of me is like, of course it makes sense that like old timers and legends wouldn't be in the ring. It's especially with the new noir of wrestling, which is, you know, I kind of epitomized by the Intercontinental title scene, right? It's Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, it's Cesaro, and an incredibly underrated Miz, who are, you know, wrestling each other in different combinations and doing all these spots, and Kevin Owens doing moves off the top rope, and it would almost seem strange to see somebody like sort of trotted out there, you know, to see Sergeant Slaughter sort of go out there and like slap the Cobra Clutch on somebody would seem almost silly with how wrestling is now. But
yeah,
I don't know. So but wrestling is also notoriously bad at sort of knowing its own history or sort of introducing the new fans to the old history. I mean, they will drop references. I mean, Michael Cole made a reference that almost gave me a heart attack yesterday because I couldn't believe he said it. And then I realized someone probably fed him that reference. You know, I was like, wow. I was like, oh, yeah, he doesn't know anything. But I wonder how they're going to introduce these old timers. Is it just the Hall of Fame? Is it just like every year in the Hall of Fame? That's when we sort of focus on it. Or are guys who are old timers going to have a spot? I'm just curious what they're going to do about that.
Well, and bringing it just back to Georgia for a second, I'm curious, you know, what's going to happen when they run this August show. I won't be there because it's August 6th and that's Scenic City Invitational weekend, which maybe we'll touch on a little bit later because the first four names they've announced are pretty awesome. But
yeah.
Can they really like draw a crowd with this being on the top? Now they might also be pulling off an Awesome Kong return match with America Strong. We'll see. That has not been announced, but they were definitely teasing that direction. But can they get people to turn out for this in a small town in South Georgia in 2016? You know, it will be interesting to see what they can actually pull off.
Yeah. Yeah. But, oh, my gosh, I'm very excited, Larry. How soon before Wendell Cooley comes on?
Well, hopefully here shortly. I'm not seeing him yet. Maybe I'll just give him a heads up here and make sure that he will be calling in.
Yeah, I imagine Wendell Cooley will probably be on for the remainder of the show. Like I said, my favorite match that I saw was him. I mean, he wrestled Lord Humongous in a match. I've rarely seen Lord Humongous look what I would call good in a match, but Wendell Cooley managed to get a good match out of him. And then the match with Adrian Street, like I said, was just mind blowing. And we've had Adrian Street on before, so it was fun watching those two guys go at it.
When you're talking about the Humongous, you're talking about the Sid Vicious version, correct?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this was the Sid Vicious version. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I know from the definitely we have to ask him about Sid Vicious because I know he has some thoughts on Sid and his work with Sid. a good story about that. So we've got to ask him about that. Since he hasn't called in yet, going back to Scenic City Invitational, the first four names, man. Leo Rush,
mm-hmm.
John Skyler, Jimmy Rave, and Gunnar Miller. I say they're off to a flying start here with this tournament.
Absolutely. Here's what's interesting. The way that they're releasing the names lends me to think that they're actually going to bring in somebody even bigger, which is, I mean, how great is that? You know, the Scenic City, obviously a huge success last year, and part of me worried that often you go through sort of the sophomore jinx, you know, when you have something that goes really, really well, and it's really well received, it's kind of hard to pull off that second year. I think there's a lot of shows. I mean, like WrestleMania 2 is atrocious. Like, it's so terrible. And, you know, you can think of any number of things like that where it's like the second year just didn't go as well. But this year they seemed bound and determined to make sure. I thought introducing Jimmy Rave, one, that's obvious he won the other one, and so you want to introduce him early. And then also having Gunnar Miller, because the two of them had such a great angle at last year.
Oh, yeah.
I think you know, giving people the heads up that, don't worry, like, you know, with all the other people that we're bringing into this thing, we're definitely going to, you know, local guys made good are definitely representing. And, I mean, Gunnar Miller is a guy who, he's just, I mean, he seems poised for an absolute breakout year this year. You know, and it's going to be fun. I mean, I assume Jeff Jeeb is going to be there at ringside with Gunnar Miller. So that's going to create all kinds of great opportunities and, all of that kind of stuff.
Speaking of Gunnar Miller, is he, doing a double shot this Saturday? Is he working, Platinum and Southern Fried? Or just
yes,
Southern
I believe
Fried?
He is. No, he's
cool.
Working them both. So and I think that's his first double shot ever. Jeff was saying, Jeff, you know, what's interesting about Jeff is Jeff manages Gunnar Miller. Like, this is very reminiscent of sort of the old days. Gunnar Miller,
yeah, real
actually asked, yes, he asked for Jeff G. Bailey as his manager and was determined and bound. And anybody who books Gunnar Miller, you go through Jeff.
Nice.
So like, and so that's been really great to see because I mean, like you said, kind of tongue in cheek, but it is very true, isn't it? Is there a true manager in wrestling besides Jeff G. Bailey at this point? Isn't that crazy that I can even ask that question? Is there another guy who's actually a manager? I don't think there is. Wow.
Wow.
Jeff will do anything to win that frickin' award. He will do anything. He will manage a racetrack. He will manage a QT. He will do anything to make sure he keeps winning manager. He makes it so hard to vote, you know. Like, it's kind of like the NBA MVP where, you know, LeBron James probably should have won a bunch, but it got to the point where people were just voting for other people just because it seemed like other people deserved the award. That you kind of have to keep topping yourself to win it. And, you know, Jeff G keeps finding a way. In the dying art of the manager, he's still determined to be the manager. And I find that as compelling when you look at the Gunnar Miller story that Jeff G. Bailey is there. It's created sort of havoc at PCW, to be honest, because Gunnar Miller is as over as a face as anybody else being there. So that's something that's definitely going to have to be dealt with and addressed. So, but luckily, Jeff G and I have always gotten along swimmingly over the years. So I'm sure we'll be able to patch that up. And I'm going to be there on Saturday. So PCW and it looks like we're going to start bringing in Slim J as well. So,
oh, nice addition,
you know,
to the roster. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So things definitely have been picking up. If I can ask you a question, Larry, before we have Wildcat on, what's another impression that you got? Like, what's something that shocked you or surprised you about that show? Obviously it's there's a lot of old timers on the card. The Georgia guys were there and acquitted themselves very effectively. Is there something that stood out to you about that card?
Well, that they won, were able to get 14 matches done in a little over 3 hours. That was pretty impressive to me.
Yeah.
That they had the sense not to let any of them run long. But you're not going to see an easier crowd. I'll tell you, they were easy to please, and it was sort of like refreshing to be in a crowd where people were just enjoying watching wrestling and just they were happy to be there and happy to see these legends and just have a good time on that basis. I expected the crowd to be fairly easy, but these folks were super easy. They weren't going
to
complain about anything.
It's nice to deal with a crowd where their arms aren't crossed while they're watching. I had a similar experience. It was sort of the difference between going to Batman versus Superman versus Civil War. Going to Captain America Civil War, we went in like the afternoon, Saturday afternoon after it opened. My kid dressed up as Captain America. We were all pumped up for it. And the audience was so keyed up to have a good time. You can just kind of feel it when you walk into that atmosphere. The theater's full and everyone's there to have a good time. Batman versus Superman, now that's a different kind of movie. It's sort of darker in tone and stuff like that. But still, you could sort of sense that people, maybe because of the pre-show hype, that sort of turned sour. Maybe it's because critics didn't really like that movie and people knew that. But there definitely wasn't that same feeling of, I'm here to watch something amazing. You know, contrasted again with, like, when we went to Force Awakens, you know, like, people were nuts for Star Wars. And then Star Wars gave you everything you wanted, right? Here's Han Solo. Here's, you know, all these great moments, all these moments that feel very familiar for a Star Wars fan. And, you know, it was just, let's have a good time. And I know we can never return to that in wrestling on a bigger scale, unfortunately, but it sure would be nice. I think step one to do this is to quit telling the crowd that they're an equal part of the show. I think the second they branded their own fans, the WWE Universe, they got themselves in a world of hurt. I think the fans, once they realized, like, we turned them on the Daniel Bryan thing. We can make anything happen, you know? and basically they get joy. Cause I've heard the house show crowds are very different in tone than the TV crowd, which tells me that people are kind of putting on a show for the cameras. I mean, in the crowd, like the booing of Roman Reigns does not happen at the house shows nearly as much. Which tells me, again, that's just people putting on affectations for the camera. And, I mean, that's a shame. That's a real shame that that's happening. However you feel about Roman Reigns, I mean, there's a group of people who want to enjoy the show that are not getting to fully enjoy the show because of the atmosphere that certain people in the crowd have generated. It's an interesting problem.
Yes, and it's one I've mentioned on here that I have sometimes at AWE, although not so much at the ones I've been to lately, but at some of them, with the crowd being too much of the show for my taste, let's put it that way. Speaking of which, what did you hear, if anything, about Sunday's AWE?
I mean, I didn't hear much. I watched the Brutal Bob Evans, Jimmy Rave match that they put online. And, it looked like the crowd was very small, probably like in the 30 range. That match obviously was good. And Rave went over with a submission on Brutal Bob Evans. I read the results of the UIW show where there was a multi-person tag thing kind of on top. And Murder, I guess the long and short of it is Murder got the pin on Robbie E, who is the UIW champion, having beaten Murder for it. So basically Murder has earned his way back in to getting a rematch with Robbie E for the UIW title. So I guess they're bringing in Robbie E yet again. No word on what that crowd was number-wise, but that's what I had heard. So.
Yeah, and the report I got from UIW, two notes on that. One, they reported a crowd of 130. And Adrian Armour was scheduled to appear but did not due to an injury he suffered working a show in Indiana on Friday night.
Oh, okay.
So that's why he was not present. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, please.
The reported attendance on the AWE show was 49 paid.
Okay. And then Why We Wrestle... I guess the big thing was, you know, they've been having the bounty on Strychnine with different people trying to collect. And Brad Cash, who wrestled that amazing hardcore match with Masada at Hardcore Hell, made the save. And so now there's sort of a tentative alliance between Brad Cash and the champion, Strychnine. So that was one of the big happenings with that. Yes.
Note on Why We Wrestle is they rescinded the plan of moving to first and third Saturdays. They're going to stick with second and fourth. That was supposed to change in August, but they have, upon further review, they're going to stick with second and fourth, which I think was the better thing to do.
Yes, it was hard to imagine why we wrestle at this stage in the game when they're really trying to get on their feet and get momentum going, switching to first and third, which seemingly almost everybody else of note runs on. It would have been crazy. In fact, if they were going to move, I was actually going to talk to Charles and go, well, if they're going to move to first and third, one of us should move to second and fourth, honestly. Otherwise, it seemed crazy. So it's a good setup. I mean, you could double shot from PCW to Southern Fried, which has worked out great for a number of guys. So that would have been a shame to change that. So.
Well, and it looks like that's what I'm going to be doing this weekend. I was originally going to go to Gastonia with my son, John, or at least that's what some people call him or think. But Zack Sabre Jr. is hurt. So the Zack Sabre Jr. Skylar match is not going to take place. There's going to be a hell of a lot of other good matches on that show, but I don't think I'm up for another road trip. I really wanted to see that Zack Sabre Jr. Skylar match. So I think John and I are going to come to PCW and Southern Fried in some combination. I don't know exactly how yet, but try to catch parts of both of those shows would be my tentative plan at this point. And speaking of Skylar, kudos to Skylar and Hollis, huh? And making that Raw debut.
It is a great feeling. I know a lot of people experience this in Georgia and in the Carolinas that know those guys. I mean, it's hard to pick guys that deserve it more, who are nicer guys, who work harder than Hollis and Skylar, and see them there wrestling against they wrestled against a team kind of debuting on Raw, didn't they? I'm trying to place who it was.
Well, they wrestled Shining Stars, the repackaged Cologne kids. Yeah.
Right. Whose gimmick hinges on, we're from Puerto Rico. I bet you really hate that, huh? Which I find, you know what? I'm going to say that gimmick is so bad it's good, Larry. I've kind of turned around on the gimmick because I'm just like, is this it? Well, if it is it, I'm kind of going for it. And boy, that finisher from Shining Star looked like death. I mean, it looked awesome. Kudos again to Skylar and Hollis for doing the job. But I mean, it is an art form to elevate a team. And I mean, they made Shining Star look unbelievable. I don't think anybody noticed the repackaging. They did a really good job of making those guys' offense look absolutely fantastic. And hopefully this is a sign for greater things to come, that the Bruiserweights are going to be a permanent part, hopefully, of the NXT roster on their way into the WWE. That's what that means.
AWE wasted no time booking the Bruiserweights for one of their upcoming shows.
They've been talking about doing a tag tournament thing, right?
They are. The second June show from AWE is a tag tournament.
So, I mean, certainly getting those guys now while you still can is kind of the feeling, right? Get those guys while you still can. So.
Well, and you said it, but I'm going to echo it. I mean, two guys, you couldn't, I mean, it sure just shows that hard work pays off. I mean, those guys are talented, but they work their asses off to get where they are.
You know, there's a lot of guys who, I mean, if we're being honest, are kind of missing a piece, right? Either they don't really flow in the ring, either they just don't seem to have it together in some way, shape, or form, or they're just assholes. And Skylar and Hollis, I mean, I don't know anybody that really has a bad word to say about either one of those guys. And
no.
So it's really great to see the guys that you want to make it start to make it. It really is encouraging. And I mean, as I look around the state, Larry, you and I talk about this all the time. It's hard to pick out the guys that are really have next level potential. And I mean, I can think of five or less, right? Like Slim J is one of those guys. I'm excited to have Slim J at PCW because I really want to showcase that guy. I feel like he's at the height of his powers, you know? great instructor of wrestling, which means he's got the, I mean, he can wrestle on the mat. He can do all the high flying stuff still. And he looks great. He's like put on all this muscle. And I mean, there's almost this feeling that other guys have sort of lapped him. And I just find that not necessarily unacceptable. I mean, whoever can make it, by all means, make it. But Slim J is one of those guys, I think, who deserves a real shot to try to break through. And I'm curious to see what he'll do in the kind of wacky atmosphere of PCW, you know. It'll be very interesting to see. But, yeah, Slim J is one of those guys I hope really something great happens for. I think the Washington Bullets are just those guys who are just going to keep plugging away and chipping away. And hopefully somebody, wrestling groups of note, really give them a shot to run with the ball. And we'll see where it goes from there.
And they're getting some nice dates outside of state in Carolina and Tennessee, you know, getting some exposure there. But let me throw a name out to you.
Yes.
Who's you're quite familiar with. Jeter. I mean, is there a place for the really unique, unusual-looking, monstrous-sized guy at a higher level who doesn't look like anyone else?
Yes. I would say Jeter is one of those guys. I mean, behind the scenes, I'm always pushing. I mean, to the point where I think he probably gets annoyed with me, where I'm like, you know, they're having this sort of open call, you know, in Orlando. You should come. Like, I think he's a guy who, again, you can't teach unique. You can't teach unusual. And Jeter just sort of encapsulates that. And part of this PCW title run, I mean, starting with July, we're really off and running until Sacred Ground. That's how we do things. And, I mean, there's going to be a number of things that happen that really showcase Jeter this year. And I'm hoping that lets people see. I mean, he gets bookings in other places, but I don't feel like anybody sort of takes true advantage of his uniqueness beyond he's a really big guy and he's going to wrestle this other really big guy. He's so much more than that. So, you know, between that and I think Gunnar Miller's another guy who's sort of got the goods. He's sort of old school in the sense that he's the legit athlete.
Right.
He's a legit tough guy who's dedicated himself to this wrestling thing. I mean, he's the kind of guy that Bill Watts or Vern Gagne would have lost their minds over. And, I mean, clearly you got Gunnar Miller in PCW going to the moon. You've got Jeter as the champion. I mean, they're going to be on a collision course. And then you're going to see two guys who have big league potential all over them in the ring with each other. With the guy on the other side who actually looks like somebody that they would face in the Fed. I sort of compare it to when Jeter would wrestle like Michael Judas, you know, who is a big leaguer. And there's just a different look when you get to see guys in proportion with guys, the size and muscularity of the people that they would encounter in the WWE. So I think this is just going to be a big year. Clearly the Scenic City as well seems determined to sort of stock that tournament. And so that's going to be a great look of here's the biggest stars, both literally and figuratively, that we can get sort of pitted against one another. And I just think that that's great. I think it's great for wrestling. I'm still a believer of, you know, but and you know, if you want to say anything's holding like Hollis and Skyler back, you'd say, oh, their size. But luckily we're in a time, it seems like we're in a transition period. You have the guy who wrote NXT, who's now the head writer of Raw and SmackDown, and certainly seems very comfortable booking smaller guys. And that's wonderful. I mean, when you look at someone like Big Cass, right? I mean, his partner goes down, and they can't give him a push fast enough. You know, there's just something about size and uniqueness that is always going to be a part of pro wrestling. At least, God, I hope so.
You know, well, and guys. I will give WWE credit in this case. At least they recognize that this guy is getting over like crazy, and they're running with it.
Yeah.
With Cass.
Yes. I mean, that's so vital. You could probably, if we sat down and went, who are the guys that they almost it almost felt like they were trying to blunt their momentum instead of just hooking a rock into their back?
It's a long list.
It's a long list of guys who, like, oh, here they go, they've gotten over. Like, and this is something that, you know, that's been, I think, you know, when people talk about old school wrestling, it's the huge negative that people don't talk about, which is there was in certain territories this idea of if you got too over, that was not a good thing. Like, you don't want to outshine the main eventers and all this kind of stuff. And quite frankly, that's a bunch of bullshit. Like, you know, over is over, and it's all about making money for everybody. So God forbid somebody gets over. Like, I'm thinking of during the invasion, the sort of predicted star was Rob Van Dam. They went nuts for Rob Van Dam.
Yeah.
And they didn't pull the trigger in time. By the time they did it, during the second ECW pay-per-view, and they had him beat Cena, who did a great job working heel in Philadelphia or, you know, wherever they did that pay-per-view, and screwing with the ECW crowd and making Van Damme look amazing. But you have to wonder, what if they had pulled the trigger earlier and all that stuff and sort of let Rob Van Damme go while the iron was hot? Could you imagine if Austin cut the Austin 316 promo the next day? Fans have signed and they're going nuts, and they went, yeah, but we don't want to rush into pushing Austin yet, because he's really a heel. Come on, are you crazy?
Well, yeah, I mean, in WWE, is it the thing of they really, you know, that nobody is allowed to get over more than the McMahons, or very few are allowed to get over more than the McMahons? You know, we do have a caller here. We speak of the devil. We are now joined by Trent Van Dries. Welcome to the Tipping Point. I haven't talked to you in a while, sir.
How are you gentlemen doing this evening?
Well, we're apparently guestless. But
there's nothing like a podcast when a guest bails up, but you guys are doing a fine job, I must say.
Well, thanks, and thanks for calling in. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I heard the start of the show, and I just want to explain something to the Flying Hawaiian here, if you don't mind, Larry. Listen.
Please, sir. Yes.
Listen, Platinum, and you're right. Nick Bockwinkel would have fit right in with the Rat Pack. And I love the Rat Pack, and I'm sure Nick had a lot of rats. The bottom line, Platinum, is The bottom line is I like the best of the best, and I love old stuff. So, you know, Nick is old. Country music is old. It's the best of the best, and that's why I like it. Does that clear it up for you, Steven?
It does clear it up. Mr. Van Dries, if I may ask a question. If you – I would consider myself a very novice country music fan. Like I said, I only listen on the radio as I'm driving in. I figured out enough to know – that new country sucks. I get that.
Yes.
Okay. If you're gonna recommend three to five different people or groups for me to listen to, what are you gonna recommend? Because I mean, I can throw, you know, we're in the modern age. I throw any of this on my phone and listen to that on the way in this Saturday to Georgia.
Three to five. Well, what do you say, Larry? I mean, maybe Hank Williams, Merle Haggard. Try Dale Watson. You'll probably like him. He's modern, but he's classic. I'll throw a few out, Larry.
You're the country music guy.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, do you like the twangy stuff, or what kind of stuff does appeal to your ear, Stephen? I guess is what I'd ask you.
That's what's
you.
Funny is I guess it's stuff that people would consider very country, which shocks me more than anybody. So yeah, like real twangy stuff, real slow works for me. Like that's what I found really, really surprising. I mean, there was stuff that I clearly recognized as like Kris Kristofferson or Willie Nelson, and I enjoyed that as well. And I was like, God, who would have thought, you know? I guess it makes sense because I did grow up in Hawaii and I did enjoy Hawaiian music, which is definitely a variation. If you've listened to a lot of Hawaiian music, which most people have not, it's definitely influenced most heavily by country. So I was very comfortable with that sort of sound.
And as a matter of fact, the steel guitar sound in country music and classic country came from the Hawaiian guitar. That's where that came from.
Very interesting.
Kind of a derivative of it. Yeah, I'd check out Hank Williams, check out some Ernest Tubb, check out some Webb Pierce. I mean, there's a lot of good 50s and 60s country, and even you could even check out, like, the original Jimmy Rogers if you want to go back, like, to the start of country music. He did a lot of yodeling and kind of bluesy kind of stuff. You know, it depends on just kind of what clicks your ears. You know, I'm big Buck Owens fan, big Del Reeves. I kind of like the Bakersfield stuff a lot because it's country, but it's kind of got that little kick of rock or rockabilly to it too. I kind of like that fusion, but still decidedly country.
I do like Buck Owens a lot. Where would you put Waylon Jennings in your rating system, Trent? Do you care for him?
Oh yeah, he's definitely high. He was high in more ways than one. Is he high? Yeah. one of the all-time greats. You know, just definitely a genius. And you know, he falls more in with the Willie Nelson and Kris Kristofferson era. You know what I mean?
I guess
he's considered old country now, but he was kind of with that '60s crowd. Kind of that they were kind of more the cool hippie kind of people. He was kind of in with that. You know, so. But definitely a great. I mean, you talk about a guy that had like a natural vibrato to his voice. What a unique voice that guy had, and what a presence and great songs. You know, outstanding, outstanding. Waylon is outstanding in his field, Larry.
Well, where did it all go to shit? You know, I mean, with country music.
It all went to shit when rock producers took over the major national studios. You know, and they decided that if we can sell country music, well, maybe we can have one kind of music, a fusion of several kinds of music that would appeal to everyone. But it really doesn't appeal to anyone. You know, it was kind of a hybrid of rock and pop and rolled into country, but they kind of rolled the country to the back. They were trying to get a bunch of new fans is what they were trying to do. But in the meantime, they kind of like, you know, turned everybody off, you know. And I guess they did gain some fans, too, and gain some exposure. But, man, they just – I don't know. It's like everything else in the world. It's like wrestling. It's like everything. They just kind of ripped the soul out of it. So.
True. But to be fair, Shania Twain has a really nice rack. Like, to be in her defense as a musician, she's very, very hot. So – Trent, since you are our resident Nick Bockwinkel expert, here's something I've noticed in the last year. There's been this push, and maybe it's just because I'm seeing it through that lens, but there seems to have been a push of this kind of like renewed appreciation of Nick Bockwinkel. Like there's these guys who put out this like top 100 wrestler list of all time, and they take votes every year. And so, you know, some guys will make huge jumps from year to year just because, like, more of their stuff becomes available. I'm thinking, like, Playboy Buddy Rose, like, jumped, like, 200 spots. And, like, Nick Bockwinkel is one of these guys that – and maybe it's because he died, but I really think it's just one of these where more stuff has sort of come out. And just different people got an appreciation of him. So, they, you know, in this day and age, you can share videos very easily and quickly. That there seems to be this real renewed sort of acknowledgement of Nick Bockwinkel as one of the all-time greats. That to me, that's really interesting. Assuming that you watch wrestling in its current form at least sometimes, is there anybody who you sort of see? I mean, it's impossible to say that any modern guy is in any sort of old-timer's like is the new form of whatever. I mean, you can sort of say Luke Harper is kind of close to Bruiser Brody, sort of in that same wheelhouse. Is there anybody who you see has kind of like Nick Bockwinkel's thing or potentially could have it that you see?
Because that's the kind of guy that I would love to see. I would love to see a guy who just carried himself like a gentleman and a champion. Because, I mean, Sami Zayn is great for what he is, but I don't look at that guy and say, that's a guy who just seems special and sort of above the crowd, you know, like a guy who's like a champion's champion and a man's man and a matinee idol type. I just don't see that guy, but maybe I'm missing something.
Well, I mean, and he's not a young guy at all, and it's going to be a funny answer, but a couple of years ago, when Chris Jericho was doing the gimmick wearing the suits and using the big words,
oh,
that was directly popular copy. That's what that was. He's even admitted that. That's what he was doing. He was doing Nick Bockwinkel. Now, he couldn't do it as well as Bockwinkel, but he had some of those qualities. You know, but as far as guys coming up now, man, that's they wouldn't let him do it anyhow is the sad thing about it. You know, that's a premium to me, but I'm trying to think, you know, who would – you know, Stephen, the thing is, though, it's like I said before, you know, Nick Bockwinkel got to AWA and got with the tag team with Ray Stevens and then later on, you know, won the singles title. He'd already been a pro wrestler for – 15 years.
Yeah.
You know, and wrestled a lot of territories and a lot as a babyface, Nicky Blackwinkle and stuff like that. But basically, you know, he was ready. You know what? I have a name for you. I have a name.
Okay. The Chris Jericho name is already a great catch, by the way. But yes.
But I have a name. Now he's much wackier, but it's a similar situation that this guy has been around for a long time, and he's finally been given the ball, and so far he's run with it pretty well. I'm going to say the modern-day Nick Bockwinkel is Kenny Omega.
Wow. Especially
Kenny Omega.
Post – well, yeah, I think – no. I can see it, especially post-AJ Styles. Once he sort of had to shed – a lot of that old gimmick to be the guy who is basically the Bullet Club guy. Trent, please go into an explanation about Kenny Omega.
Well, he does. He doesn't have the class. He doesn't exude the class, but he's got the competence. He's very, very cocky. The ring work is superlative. He can work with anybody. He's kind of like that old veteran. He can work with anybody and look great. He uses the large words on his interviews. In New Japan, he's fluent in Japanese and English, but he speaks above the people's heads. Nose is always up in the air. He's better than you. He just exudes that certain – he's good, damn it, and you know it. It pisses you off, just like Bockwinkel, you know. So, I mean, there are qualities that lack, too, but that's the closest I can come. And I'm a big Omega mark. Now, he is over the top, too. I also think there's some Terry Funk – in him too, because he's so over the top.
Yes.
Selling and stuff like that. You know, there's some of that too. And that, if anybody has a knock of Omega, that tends to be the over the topness. And I can see that too, you know, but I don't know, Larry, do you see any Bockwinkel in Omega? I mean, I was blindsided by this question. I think I came up with a damn good answer.
I think so too.
I think the Chris Jericho
answer was great too.
Yeah. Both. Yeah. Yeah. And as you explained Omega, I can see your point about it. Yeah.
Yeah, there's just something about it. And the main thing is a guy is ready for that spot. You know, is there just something about that? These guys now, I don't know if they're bringing up. They're just, boy, you can tell they're not ready for their spots, for one thing. You know, it just sticks out like a sore thumb. So it's very difficult to – I mean, what popped in my mind, it wouldn't be Bockwinkel, but the guy that I really see as a potential star, and I hope they let him do it, he wouldn't be Bockwinkel, but frickin' Chad Gable. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Oh, Chad Gable.
What a talent. And the other guy that pops in my mind is Will Ospreay, who I wouldn't call Bockwinkel, but man, why? Have you guys seen that guy? Holy shit.
Yeah.
These are guys that are just really exciting young talents, and you just, you know, you salivate to see what they become. Gable's got, to me, he's got Kurt Angle written all over him, you know, so.
You know, we're reaching like 7:55 here. It doesn't look like Wendell Cooley's going to come on, but Larry, did you find the Is He High with Wendell Cooley?
I have found he is he high with Wendell Cooley. Yes, indeed.
Since Trent's on with us, I figure we might as well. Hopefully, we'll get Wendell Cooley on next time. But I think listening to an Izzy High with Wendell Cooley promo and then talking about it is a pretty great way to close out the show.
Let's do it.
Because I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high. La la la.
It's time to play Is He
Talked about a fucking pound of weed and played a bunch of video games.
Weed is tight. Weed is tight. That's awesome.
That's awesome. Weed is awesome.
That's right, Charlie. You know, there comes a time in a person's life when he has to sit back and get his priorities straight. And I've gotten my priorities straight now because of a guy named Don the Stumper Harris, who when he first came in, seemed like every time I turned around and looked, I was looking him right in the face, Charlie, because he wanted to make a name for himself here, and the only way to make a name for himself is to beat the man. And at the present time, I am the man, which is the CWF heavyweight champion. Now, I've got my priorities straight, and my priorities are you, Donna Stomper Harris, and that means any time and any place I'm able to crawl into the ring with you, Jack, I'm going to do it. Because number one, Charlie, like I said, at the first onstart, every time I turned around, I was looking him in the face. He tried to get my attention that way, and I guess he thought he didn't have it because he came out along with three other guys that held me down in the ring a few weeks ago and sprayed a white streak down my hair, Charlie, which took quite a while to get out. And I still hadn't got over that. But I want to tell you something, Don the Stomper Harris. I'm not a hard man to find. You can look in the yellow pages if you want my address or if you want my telephone number. You just let your fingers do the walking. And when you open that page up, it's going to say champion. That's where you'll find me.
Hey! Now, Wendell Cooley, who is not really famous for being a great... That's a good freaking promo. Am I wrong?
Well, I would say he finished strong.
I was going to say, you know, like, again, it's something that's missing from promos nowadays. In acting or improv or anything else, they always say you want to give yourself somewhere to go.
Right. Yeah,
and
yeah.
Clearly that's a promo that, like, it started off. I mean, it was cliche city too, right, in the beginning.
Yeah. Oh,
but
yeah.
Then it was – but then he really did seem like he was getting more and more agitated. Then he talked about you held me down. I did like the part where they put the white streak in his hair, and he's like, and that took quite some time to get out.
It was
in a different voice that comes across as prissy.
Right.
It's like, bitch,
right, yeah.
You know how long it took me to get that white shit out of my hair? It's like – and I do love a Yellow Pages reference. I guess you couldn't really make that nowadays. It's like, you know, if you want to find me, you know what you do? You go to peoplesearch.com. You put in my name. You put in my zip code. And then you're probably going to have to pay a bit of a premium for them to give you the proper information. But you go ahead and do all that. I'll reimburse you. I'll go on Square, and I'll zip my credit card through and put that money right back into your account. You know, maybe I need to cut this promo, guys. I think Wendell Cooley has inspired me. So I don't think he was high, though. I'll say this for him. I don't think he was high. Larry, what do you say?
I don't think so. Now, I know from the interview that Dave Wills did with him that he did his share of partying, not as much as some. But he was friends with Buddy Landell and so forth. But I would say he was not.
An indictment by association, if there ever was one.
You know, and since he was from L.A., Lower Alabama, no way.
You know, looking at this Wendell Cooley, we'll all have our last thoughts. Mine is this. I'm looking at Wendell Cooley versus Adrian Street, and there's a couple things that are really noticeable. One, obviously, how wrestling just got mileage out of booking contrasts, right? He's the cowboy guy. He's in tremendous shape. Like, that's what I'm sort of blown away by Wendell Cooley. He looks phenomenal. I mean, you could take him. You'd have to change the feathered hair, of course, but you could put him put him in a WWE or NXT ring or Ring of Honor, and he certainly not only wouldn't look out of place, he'd be one of the bigger guys. He would look fantastic, you know. And then you look at it, Adrian Street, and again, it's just the little things that they do right, and it's the little touches and the little details. And Wendell Cooley, I'll say this for him too, he sold like, I mean, he was phenomenal in this fact that like every hit that Adrian Street gave him, he was so good at garnering sympathy through selling, which is the lost art. I watched Raw last night, and you know what the best sell that I saw was, besides Ric Flair having to sell that crappy slap from Stephanie McMahon, was Xavier Woods selling being crushed by a cardboard box. Like I looked at New Day. I mean, that segment was great in the sense that it did something that you didn't even know they were trying to do, which is put over the vaudevillains. Like, because the vaudevillains were sort of generic threat in that whole thing, and they've made it that, you know what? No, these guys kicked our ass. And I think it felt really good in the age where there's a million run-ins. That's the only way they can set anything up as a run-in or to be at ringside, and then you get involved. They really made that match a thing and pulled off a pretty funny segment as well. I mean, whatever people think about that stuff, Mike Moynihan bitches all the time about New Day. But come on, when Kofi Kingston came out of that box and said, oh, it's 2009, don't make me go back.
That was my best year.
I mean, yeah, that's just funny. And Big E playing the role of Mercutio in Romeo and Juliet and kind of crapping on everything, which lets you get along with the joke. You know, it's just like, that's a cardboard box. No, it's and then just ignore him and keep going on with the bit. The whole thing just worked for me. And more importantly, it made the vaudevillains, who I thought had sort of gotten short shift, where it's like they got the push through the tournament. They didn't get to have that finals against Enzo and Cass because of the injury. And now they've made them a thing where they really weren't one before. I thought it was really successful. But any last thoughts, Trent Van Dries?
Well, I just wanted to mention that, and Larry, you may pop for this, but guess where I'm going this Saturday, Larry?
I have no fucking clue, man. Where are you going?
At 10 a.m. at the Golden Corral here in Louisville, Kentucky, on Taylorsville Road, my buffet with Bolin, Jim Cornette and Kenny Bolin going at it.
All right.
3 hours or more. And it costs $29 a pop. It costs $29 a pop, and you get the buffet. And I'm going there for my wedding anniversary.
Oh, man.
Oh.
That's going to be entertaining. If you've ever heard Bolin and Cornette going at it, it's going to be entertaining, I can guarantee
you. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Larry, any parting thoughts? Happy anniversary, by the way.
Thank you.
At the Golden Corral. How can I convince my wife? We've only been married like 11, 12 years. How can I convince her that Golden Corral is okay for our wedding anniversary, Trent? What's the secret?
Use the word gold, baby. Gold.
Gold. Golden Corral. Good man.
Gold.
Right.
Gold.
Right. Man, don't say too many. If you say gold in the mirror five times, Jeff Jarrett shows up.
And really push the chocolate wonderfall. That's a big seller. Chocolate wonderfall.
I'm gonna give. Maybe that's it. You're talking about Jeter. Maybe that's what we need to do. We need to name him the Chocolate Wonderfall.
See
where it goes. Larry. Larry, any parting thoughts? Unfortunately, obviously, Wildcat Wendell Cooley couldn't be on. We'll definitely try to get him on again. But any parting thoughts or things to think about Wendell Cooley or the old timers in general?
Well, one thing. About when you touched on Cooley and Street, one thing Cooley said was, of course, that's what people most remember about his time in Continental was the feud with Street. The other thing that really got me about that feud that he had mentioned in the Dave Wills interview is that he called all the matches as the babyface in that feud, and Street never opened his mouth.
Wow.
And that's
amazing.
That's the kind of trust he had in Cooley.
Well, and again, I highly recommend that match. If you just put in the search for Wendell Cooley and Adrian Street, you'll see at least two different matches. And I mean, knowing that Cooley called out those matches, here's what I want the young wrestlers who listen to this show to get out of watching that. Wendell Cooley was in control of that match. We know this now. But look at how unselfish he is. That he wins one of those matches and it doesn't hurt Adrian Street at all. In an era where wins and losses counted 1,000 times more than they do now. And I mean, just watch that match and tell me that Cooley wasn't one of the most unselfish guys as far as, I mean, Adrian Street mauls him to the point, like I said, where I was getting antsy. And then I realized this is exactly how they want me to feel. They got me. And so, yes, great, great call, Larry. Thank you for calling in, Trent. Definitely
a pleasure,
as always. I'll be listening to some Merle Haggard and company on the way to Georgia this Saturday when I come to PCW.
Perfect.
And next week is Three the Hard Way. And then hopefully in 2 weeks' time on the Tipping Point, we will have Wendell Cooley. Boy, you know what would be great, Larry? What if we could get Wendell Cooley and Adrian Street on at the same time, at least for part
of
it?
That'd be awesome.
Oh, my God.
To sort of talk about their feud, I think that would be amazing.
I think it would be.
And if anyone can make it happen, it's certainly Larry Goodman. And remember, our love tip of the day, the word is gold. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you in 2 weeks for the Tipping Point. You got it at Jared's. No, it was actually the Golden Corral. I was like...
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com for the latest information on upcoming events and more. As always, we thank you for your continued support.